Hey there, I'm Katie Featherston.
I'm Mika Sloat.
And you're listening to Earthling Entertainment.
Prepare yourself for Earthling Entertainment, the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture, with your host, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Black.
I love it. I'm a fan of this. I'm here for it.
Welcome to another episode of Earthling Entertainment with your hosts, Joe and Ryan.
That's right. I'm your host who is the result of a child's wish, Joe Wakefield.
Hey, guys, it was my wish. Hi, I'm Ryan.
That's right. So, guys, you might be wondering, well, what is this podcast? Like, what do you guys do?
What?
I'm going to tell you. We're kind of a layer cake of paranormal and pop culture. So we start out with a little thing called spooky stuff, which is a myth of legend or a, you know, some kind of spooky thing.
Yeah.
After that, we have Earth Pop, which is usually genre news. It's our pop culture section.
That's today, right. A little nerdy.
Yeah, yeah. Today we got celebrity guests. We're actually hanging out with the stars of Paranormal Activity.
That's right. And it was a great interview.
It was one of the rare ones where Ryan actually got to sit in and be a part of it. Which
I was so happy to be here for it. They were awesome. You guys are going to love it.
You are. Well, after that, we have Disclosure Discussion, which is all about aliens, and then we wrap it all up with Real World Weird. When something is strange, but not paranormal, when something is odd, but, you know, actual news, that's where it belongs.
Sometimes it's messed up, sometimes it's hilarious.
It's true. There's a couple funny ones in this one. I don't want to give it away, but yeah, that's the show. So, thank you for joining us. Please download the episode anywhere you are listening to this podcast, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of that. Downloading the episode is the best way to support the show. But if you are a YouTube person, we have recently started doing a video. This is probably only the sixth or seventh episode where we actually had video. We spent like 2 years building the show in the audio zone, and now our YouTube has been a little neglected. So if you want to go to Earthling Entertainment on YouTube and subscribe, check out the videos, like all that jargon, we'd love to have you.
No, yeah, YouTube is definitely we've been having fun with this, doing video now, and we've been putting out clips, stuff like that, so you can follow us on all of our social media as well.
Oh yeah, Instagram, he does the TikTok, so
yep.
Any of that stuff.
We're out there.
But that is enough. There's a couple things that happened over the weekend that we need to talk about. It was Memorial Day weekend. And what happens sometimes on these long weekends is a big release happens. A big movie happens.
Mm-hmm.
I was not able to do any kind of movie this weekend because I was vacationing with my family. We went camping. It was great. I'll tell you about that in a sec. But Ryan actually was able to go to MJR and do our out of theater review for Star Wars.
Yes.
Grogu and the Mandalorian Grogu.
Hey, you know what? Hey, flippity flop, yeah, it was awesome. Oh my God. This is a non-spoiler review. Like, other than what I just said, it was like, you guys can see the video, but for real, it was awesome.
All right, but give some counterpoints. I know when you get excited, sometimes the finer details, like think, let's break it down a bit. What was awesome? Was it a battle? Was it a fight? Was it a machine? Was it
right
a character?
Off the bat? You get, you know, you see a bit of it in the trailer where they're basically almost looks like they're on Hoth, but I don't think they're on Hoth.
Sure,
it's another
ice planet,
and we get the AT-ATs, and it's just the Mandalorian and Grogu just messing up because they're just going through working for the Republic now to take out these remnants of the Empire that are still out there.
Yeah, so their bounty hunting is now exclusive after old Empire generals and war crimes.
Correct. And just the whole ride from that moment to them getting that, because then, of course, they get, oh, you got to go work for the Hutt. So now they have to go to Nal Hutta.
Sure. Which, for those of you who don't know, Nal Hutta is the home planet of the Hutts. Now, the Hutts, or Jabba the Hutt is what most people know, the big fat guy. But they're not. They're, like, super strong, and they have their own planet that we've never seen except an expanded universe. So this isn't only, I don't think we've even seen it in the cartoons, right?
I believe so, yeah. We've only seen it in the cartoons. And
sure. So there you go. First live action.
We got Radha back in the Clone Wars cartoons.
Yeah, so the original...
As a baby.
Yeah, so the Clone Wars started out as an animated movie, and a lot of people don't remember this. I don't know if it was kind of the pilot of the show, but they did the animated movie first, and that whole movie introduced Ahsoka, and also the mission was to get a kidnapped Jabba the Hutt son, Rada the Hutt, and we get to see him full grown.
And in this one, I don't know how much spoiler this is going to give away, but they basically, they got to save him again. They got to save Rada.
Rada always getting into trouble.
Getting into trouble again.
Oh, damn, Hutt boy is going to get into some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
so now we are, we're saving Rada, and it's, to me, this just, after I was done with this movie, I'm like, I feel like I could watch 100 of these, different ones. Like, I feel like they could do like a James Bond with the Mandalorian and Grogu. Just, you got Grogu, which is an amazing practical effect puppet, whatever you call it, you know, whatever you want to call it.
It's CGI, but it's also a puppet. You know, they do all that stuff. They try to, you know, in Star Wars.
There was
so they do
no CGI on him. There was none on Grogu.
I guarantee they did, whether it was eye blinking or breathing. Trust me, as a filmmaker,
I don't know. I don't know about that.
This
I,
is awesome because I'm going to win this. So bet me $100.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay, bet me $200.
I bet with my life, never my money. That's right, the mummy. That's what Rick O'Connell said. That's what I said.
All right, move on.
All right, so moving on. But no, it was amazing. So I just feel like you could just put anybody under the helmet, and you could do this. Like,
forever.
That's how
I know,
much I enjoyed it. You make a good story, you can make another Indiana Jones with Mandalorian and Grogu. You could make James Bond with Mandalorian and Grogu.
Okay. And I love Star Wars. I love Mandalorian and Grogu. But to play devil's advocate, didn't they do that? You're saying they could have multiple adventures. Well, didn't they do that with a television show?
Correct.
So
but
they
this
don't
is different.
Need... Why was it different? Why is the movie different? For those
there
people...
There was something more powerful to it. It was more solid. It was like, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Fair enough.
It's hard to describe.
I feel like we've talked enough about this new movie. But,
okay.
So give us your final thoughts, if you have any.
Final thoughts, 10 out of 10. You got to see it in the theater. Support these movies, because right now we see seen for no reason at all. Like, why are, for a couple few weeks now, we've been hearing, oh, it's going to do terrible. It's like, hasn't even come out yet.
Star Wars like, fans are the most divisive, angry fans ever. I don't know why.
It's ridiculous.
They're poisonous fans.
Stop listening to these media. They all jump on the same rage bait. It's so odd to me, because I saw the movie and it was amazing. And it's like, none of this made any sense. Everybody said all these things and none of it's true. Everyone's like, oh, it's three episodes mashed into one. No, it literally has a beginning, middle, and an end that all completely tie together perfectly. And then it's like, oh, Grogu doesn't do enough. He is vital in countless parts of this movie. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, all of these negative things meant nothing. Like they were all wrong.
Well, you know, great. I haven't seen the movie yet. I just know way too much about it because internet, we do this kind of show. We see certain things early, for sure. But I will say that you are admittedly a huge Star Wars fan.
Yes.
And admittedly a huge fan of The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So
I am slightly biased.
Just, that's all I'm saying. So 10 out of 10 is Ryan's review. I'll give you mine later, but slightly biased. But still, guys, a lot of fun. An adventure.
Yes. Yes. Like an incredible adventure from beginning to end. And the musical score. Chef's kiss. Mwah. Oh my God. Ludwig Göransson, I believe is his name. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. He's going to be doing the Odyssey this year. He'll be doing the score for them.
Nice.
Dude,
well,
yeah.
You know, Ryan's telling me that he was listening to the score at work.
I was.
Just.
Oh, dude, yeah. Like, come on. Like, dude, it's so good.
Well, chances are, if you guys are a Star Wars fan or a Mandalorian Grogu fan, you have already seen this movie. But if you haven't yet, we definitely recommend seeing it. And if you're going to see it and you're in the Michigan area, why not check it out at MJR Theaters?
That's a great idea, Joe.
They're a wonderful theater chain. They are friends of the show. I'm not going to lie about that, but they also are my legit theater. I go there once a week. I love the VIP booths. It makes me feel like I'm in a little cocoon and I'm safe watching my movie.
Right. You are safe, Joe. Now enjoy the main.
So if you are one of those people who suffer from anxiety and doesn't like crowds, go there and actually get one of these VIP chairs. I guarantee it'll help you out. And that's just another reason why you can go to the movies. By the way, here's an ad for MJR. It's more fun at MJR.
Don't just go to the movies, experience them in Laser Ultra and the luxury of VIP seats exclusively at MJR Theaters. Our Laser Ultra auditoriums feature stunning 4K laser projection on a supersized screen and Dolby Atmos immersive sound that you can feel. Plus, you can relax in heated reclining VIP seats surrounded by your own personal privacy enclosure. Get your tickets to see the latest blockbusters in Laser Ultra at MJRTheaters.com.
So yeah, go to the movies. And you know what? If you're not in Michigan and you're not near an MJR, you should still go to the movies.
You should.
Yeah. Support film exhibition.
Support film. Support Star Wars this weekend. Do it.
That is true.
Do it.
So reason why I couldn't see Star Wars, like I mentioned, is I went to camp. Camp Dearborn, to be specific. I don't think that would mean much to random listeners around the world, but it's a campground that my parents met at. And I went every year of my life. And when I moved back to Michigan, started bringing my kids. And now my son, who's three, has been there three times. And my 1-year-old has been there one. So it's just a kind of family tradition. And what's funny about Camp Dearborn is in the 50s and in the 60s, it was kind of like a straight up like vacation resort. Like Dirty Dancing style. They had a roller rink. They had like buildings where people can go and listen to records because it was the 60s, you know?
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. I mean, like, but the point is it was like everything. Like, here's our aerobics classes in the 80s, like a full-on resort. And when I was a kid, it was not like that at all, but it still had a lot of these amenities. And then slowly over time, they like sold half of it to a golf course. And then they tore down all these tents and then this and then that. And slowly it became kind of just like nothing but like a KOA, like a field where you could pitch a tent.
Yeah.
They're coming back. They're coming back. It's been like 10 years of them being funded and they're showing improvement. But anyways, the reason why I bring this up is it is a lot of fun. You forget sometimes when you're in places where there's winter, how nice it is to just be outside in a t-shirt around a campfire.
Yeah. No, I love camping.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I, you know, grew up in the Scouts, did all that, plenty of it.
Yeah. So you're probably over camping for the rest of your life.
I mean, I'm still down to camp. Like, me and my girlfriend, we talk about doing it all the time. But yeah, I don't know why we just
talk about it.
Yeah, we do. We just talk. we dream about camping. Like, we have these camping dreams. But we just, it's like we've been so busy.
You know what? I totally get it, man. Yeah. I'm not a rustic camper, right? Like, I'm not going to camp somewhere where there's not a toilet nearby. Like, okay, it's fine enough if it's a different building. You know, it's even fine if it's an outhouse. I could deal with an outhouse, but I'm not going to dig a hole. Do you know what I mean? Like that's kind of my level for camping. But my wife's level is far different than my level. So when I went to Camp Dearborn when I was like a kid, we would stay at these, they were cabins, but it was basically plywood on a wood frame. It was a cabin. You know what I mean? And there was no plumbing and like, I guess there was electricity. that's not what they are now. Like there's these resort cabins and these are the ones my wife needs. And it has a shower and a sink inside.
I mean,
yeah, but like for me,
that's
like,
camping.
Part of the it's a little house. Part of the thing with me is doing all the weird chore stuff that you had to do. Like we had to like go get buckets of water from the community sink and bring it to our camp to wash our hands because there was no running water. We had to do all the rough stuff. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, but I want my kids to experience that. And after camping at this luxury cabin with my kids, I realized, no, I don't. I'm tired as it is. And they're too young to help. Why would I want more work? I'll take the shower inside.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Anyways, the reason why I bring it up is I watched Paranormal Activity again on my phone, and I was outside, and it was so scary to watch it outside. Now, the first time I seen it, it's not really my type of movie when it comes to suspense, but this time I totally got it. And I rewatched it because obviously we're interviewing them later in the show, but it hit me so much harder. When you're just like, there's like wind and like sounds of things around you. Have you ever seen like a really creepy movie outside?
Oh yeah. No. And I can only imagine with Paranormal Activity, just because that one is, it's unique in that I put it like, it's in such a weird category. Cause you just feel like you're just watching like found footage in a way, right? You're just looking through just camera footage. It makes it so real. Like all the little subtlest movements. It's like, holy crap. Like, it looks real. Like
yeah, they did a good job of making you feel like it was like actually, oh my God, this happened a year ago and we're seeing it now. You know what's funny though is if it did happen, like Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity and like people were killed and this is like footage from cops or found footage from that the couples recorded or whatever, this is a crime scene. They wouldn't put it in theaters. Like, right. You can't do that.
Like Diary of the Dead, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's funny because I'm thinking about like anybody who actually like thought it was real. It's like, hold on, take a breath. I don't think the families of the deceased would let the Paramount put this in theaters.
And you know, as we know with like with Blair Witch, you know, like they were getting letters, like their mothers, their parents were getting letters of like condolences from people around the world.
Yeah.
And I believe that even Katie in our interview later, she was saying that even she had a few people like, oh my gosh, you're possessed. Are you possessed?
That's a good story. So don't, we'll save that for the interview. But you know what? I don't know. I'm excited. And because we're talking to them today and they visited the show, I wanted to say, hey, Ryan, can we do kind of like a paranormal theme for the show?
So, I was hoping you would say that because yeah. I actually had some good stuff prepared, which is rather Paranormal Activity like.
Ooh, perfect. Well-rounded show. That's what we got here.
And that's true. And actually, this week's spooky stuff is a pretty good one, and I'm shocked that I actually haven't stumbled across it yet. It's another Ed and Lorraine Warren investigation story.
Those guys.
And a movie actually came out last year based on it.
Oh, right on.
So let's jump into spooky stuff.
Let's jump in. Hey, guys, check out this week's
spooky stuff.
The Smurl Family Haunting.
It's cool. I don't know. It's a cool last name. Smurl?
Smurl.
Smurl.
Almost like Smurfs.
But Smurl. Oh my God. You'd have to name your kid Earl. Be like, this is my son, Earl Smurl.
Earl Smurl? Oh no.
Yes.
Poor Earl. Soon after, the Smurl family moved into their duplex in West Pittston, Pennsylvania, they began experiencing unexplained phenomena such as banging on the walls, phantom screams, and putrid odors. Over the years, the activity would escalate to physical attacks on the family. The Smurls contacted the Catholic Church, but could find no evidence of a haunting. It wasn't until Ed and Lorraine Warren investigated the home in 1986 that they uncovered a demonic presence that had been lurking in the house for over a decade.
I don't know, it looks like... Never mind. I was like cat paws. I don't know what this was. I don't know. Try to do some flair.
Dude, not enough flair. You're doing just enough flair. You need to do more flair.
That's scary.
That's what I'm talking about. That's where it's at. It all started in August 1973. The Smurl family purchased a duplex on Chase Street in West Pittston, Pennsylvania, after flooding from a hurricane destroyed their home. Jack and Janet Smurl lived in one side of the duplex with their daughters, Dawn and Heather, while Jack's parents, John and Mary, lived on the other side. Janet would later give birth to twin daughters, Sharon and Karen, while living in the Chase Street duplex.
Sharon and Karen.
That's Sharon and Karen Smurl.
Sharon and Carol and Earl Smurl.
Earl Smurl. Almost.
I mean, I don't want to disrespect the family, but I feel like we need to make some character named Earl Smurl.
I'm all for this. All right. Okay, Earl.
Like, we're going to come up with, like, a reoccurring thing in the show. We'll have, like, an intern. We'll pretend he's out there, and eventually we'll get an actor to play him, and he'll come on and scream, hey, it's Earl Smurl.
Dude, on the street live, it's Earl Smurl with that third, like, yes. Entertainment.
That's right. Hi, guys! He's got to have, like, yes. He's got his voice has got to crack every
it's
time.
It's almost like Morty. Yeah. Like, oh, jeez.
I love it.
So almost as soon as the Smurls moved in, they realized something was off about their new home. It started innocently enough with objects disappearing and electrical malfunctions.
That's not innocent.
However, things took a turn when they were awakened in the middle of the night to the sound of banging on the walls and ceiling. During the day, the family began to notice a foul stench throughout both sides of the duplex. It smelled like a combination of sulfur and rotting flesh.
Yeah, that just feels like it's probably from hell. Like, you smell sulfur and rotting flesh.
That's like, pretty much hell.
I don't need to call someone to know there's a demon.
Like, yes, and usually this comes along as well. There were also sounds of a pig grunting.
Okay, well.
As well.
I don't know if that adds to demon, but it's definitely unsettling.
I feel like it does a little bit.
So is the demon a pig, or the demon calling us pigs? Like, humans are pigs. Like, technically, that's actually pretty close to true.
Yeah, their flesh is pretty similar to ours.
Same with their eyes. Yeah.
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 A cannibal said once that they taste about the same, too.
Huh. Well, anyway, so eventually black mist began to appear in hallways. Sometimes these mists masses transformed into shadow figures.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Years later, during an interview, Janet Smurl would tell a reporter, "Some people say they don't know if there is a heaven or hell. Well, in this house, we know heaven and hell exist because we have seen both sides." Unable to move out of the duplex due to financial constraints, the Smurls began to fear for their safety as the hauntings violently escalated. As the years went on, and the entity haunting the Smurls grew stronger, it began to physically attack them. One of the Smurl daughters was pushed down the stairs by an unseen force. The family also watched in terror as their 75-pound German Shepherd levitated in the air and was thrown against the wall.
That's not funny, but I just... Horror! In my head, exactly. In my head, it was like, oh no!
Fluffy!
Ah! Also, what were the... I know it's not going to be in there, but like, what were the parents doing? Like, I've lived in a duplex. You could hear your neighbors. So can you just imagine like all this screaming and the pig and the sulfur and the parents are just like, oh, damn it, Janet being crazy teenager again.
Keep it down in there.
Get Earl. He's a good boy.
Another one of the Smurl daughters was nearly killed when the chandelier above the kitchen abruptly fell.
Well, that was just the Phantom of the Opera.
Dun, 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 dun. Jack's mother, Mary, had a heart attack in the house, which they attributed to the demon. However, these were not the worst of the hauntings. One day, while the rest of the family was out of the house, Jack Smurl claimed he was sexually assaulted by a demonic entity known as a succubus. This demon would later attack Janet, who was paralyzed in bed next to a sleeping Jack. The Smurls also said that the entity would bite Jack on the ear and shake their bed at night. The Smurls were members of the Catholic Church and called on the church for assistance. A priest stayed at the home for a week, but witnessed no hauntings or demonic activity. With the church offering no further assistance, someone recommended that the family contact demonologist Ed and Lorraine Warren. Their investigation would put the Smurl haunting on a national stage and change the family's life forever.
I don't know, man. I'm sure that young kid really liked being assaulted by a ghost and having the whole nation know.
Yeah, that's there's no privacy in this case. That's true. It basically blew up. Like, this became front page news for a while.
I mean, it was before the internet, so this is some juicy stories.
This was pretty juicy, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, Lorraine and Ed Warren, who were famous at the time.
Demonologists, is that what they call themselves?
Yeah.
Are they just paranormal helpers?
It says demonologists here.
Demonologists. That's just a cool title.
It is pretty sweet. We're ufologists.
Ooh.
I guess we're kind of demonologists. We cover this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but we don't actually, I mean, our study and our research is not like, we're not going to these places, right? Like, I feel like we have to...
We're paranormal investigators.
I don't think we can claim any of that stuff. I think we're, like, paranormal reporters.
We
like,
talk about it.
We spread the word, man. We're enthusiasts. But, like, people who actually spend thousands of dollars to go to, like, these actual places and do these crazy... I don't want to dismiss them by being like, I'm a paranormal investigator.
Fair.
Yeah, I'm just
saying. Fair. We are...
People work hard.
We one day, we can dream. We can dream.
You could dream. I'm going to stay home. Be safe.
So Lorraine and Ed Warren started their investigation of the Smurl house in January of 1986. Ed began the investigation...
I was born that year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He was using religious provocation to attract the spirit. According to Ed, quote, "I did not have to wait moments when the very thing I felt was a drop in temperature of at least 30-some degrees. Then, a dark mass formed about 3 feet in front of me. There was a sound in back of me. I could hear rattling around." The Warrens later found the words, "Get out," written on a mirror that they believed was a message to them from the demon itself. After spending months investigating the house, the Warrens determined that four entities were haunting the Smurls. Two were female spirits. One was a male spirit who had died in the home or somewhere on the property. The fourth entity was a demonic spirit who forced the other human entity ghosts to do its bidding.
I mean, that sucks. Like, you're already dead, you're not moving on, and now I'm going to deal with this demon ordering me around?
Yeah. Get me a drink of water.
Yeah.
Put a lemon in it.
Oh,
do you have any peanut butter?
Kazuzu!
Do you have any peanut butter?
Oh, my God.
What kind of jelly?
We're done. Scratch my back.
Scratch my back. So three exorcisms were performed on the house, including one by Episcopal priest recommended by the Warrens, but the hauntings continued. The Warrens did find a cause for why this demon targeted the Smurls. According to Ed, the family was among the chosen, meaning people who were picked by demons to haunt and terrorize. The Smurl family haunting inspired last year's 2025 film, The Conjuring, Last Rites.
But hold on. Like, you're just like, oh, yep.
You were chosen.
Yep. There's a,
anyways.
Like, I'm dumped here. Like,
that wraps that right up.
Doesn't feel like enough explanation.
Yeah, anyways.
Ah, well, you see, you were born screwed.
Well, I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. Well, guys, the bill will be in the mail.
See ya.
All right. Anyways, moving on.
We tried. Good luck.
But so that was the haunting of the Smurls.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, honestly,
thinking of Earl Schmurl.
I know Earl Schmurl. Let us know what you think Earl Schmurl should get into antics wise, or what you think of the Smurl family haunting, or what you even think of the Exorcist Last Rites movie that was released last year, which was based on this. You can hit us up at earthlingentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. You know, I just thank you for finding a good one. I did think that was a good one. It does go well with our paranormal activity theme,
right?
And so, you know what? Let's do that. With no further ado, let's jump into that interview. Now, I did want to say something. A lot of times, you may notice that I'm wearing different clothes during the interview, and that's because we do these interviews around the time. That any time that we need to, right?
That's true.
So it's never usually the day we record, but this was actually the same day. We just finished this interview a little bit ago, and it was really nice. It's nice that it's fresh in my mind.
Me too.
Totally.
On today's episode, we're diving into one of the most influential horror movies of a modern era as we sit down with Mika Sloat and Katie Featherston from Paranormal Activity. We talk about the insane success of the film, the lasting impact it had on horror and found footage, behind-the-scenes memories from making the movie, and what it's like being a part of a franchise that terrified audiences around the world. If you've ever slept with the lights on after hearing a strange noise in the middle of the night, this interview is for you.
Hey guys, so the one thing I really wanted to know is you went into this franchise, you know, when did it start? Like, how did it start with you? When did you know that you were into something special?
Well, Mika, can I jump in?
Yes, please do.
When did we know we were doing something special is different than when we knew we were doing a franchise. So when we made this movie way back in the early days, you know, we auditioned and you know, we were just kind of struggling actors doing our own thing. And we auditioned, we got the job, we filmed it, you know, the two of us with Oren and some of his friends who helped. And it was a magical kind of summer camp experience for me. You know, we were all so creative. We all worked so well together. And that in and of itself was special. And that would have been a memory I would have carried with me for forever, even if it had ended there.
Sure.
But then years later, when it came out, you know, we were blown away by the success and by people's reaction to it. We were so grateful. And I think it was, you know, pretty soon after the first one came out into theaters that we kind of, the word from high came on down and they were like, we've greenlit a second one. And I remember Mika and Oren and I just kind of looking at each other being like, oh my gosh, what? So then we knew we were off to the races, and we had no idea how big it would become from there. So wow, it's been a wild journey.
And then for me, I'd say the first, when I first walked into the room at the audition, there was already like palpable magic in the, just in the improv of the audition and everything else. Yeah. And I think what Katie's talking about is actually not unique to Paranormal Activity. I think all, well, yeah, I would say it's like the feeling of something being right. There's like when you're creating art or anything else, really, there's that flow state. And if you're able to do that and get into that flow state with other people, then magic happens. And so I think this is a universal thing that applies globally to all human endeavor, if I may get into my philosophical self for a moment. And that's an extremely special thing. So I'm very grateful for Katie and Oren for this whole journey, especially because Paranormal Activity is unique in the sense that most films are produced by a studio and then they're released, and that's how it is. And we not only created this independently, but then all of the audience members who voted for the demanded campaign and are listed in the credits are part of the franchise. Like the
happening. Yeah.
So I'm not aware of anything else that in the movie world, at least, that has done that. So it's a tremendous sort of resonance that I feel with the fans, and I'm grateful to all the people who have joined together to produce the franchise.
Yeah, well said.
It's awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of fans, since you guys play a version of yourself, and let's just say things happen to your characters, did you ever run into a fan who was shocked to see you in real life because they thought that you may have fallen under the fate of your characters?
Yes and no. I think most people who meet us in the real world understand that we were acting and we're not really dating and we don't really live in San Diego and I'm not really possessed, right? All of that. But I do think that the movie, you know, especially our interesting choice to use our real names, lent itself to it being very believable. And I remember my mom telling me when the first movie came out, she was at a very early screening of it with like my, you know, she's lives in Texas. And so my family all went, and the movie was over and she was in the bathroom and this girl was crying because she was so upset that Mika was dead. And she was so upset that like my character was possessed. And where is Katie in the movie? Where is she? You know, all this kind of stuff. And the girl thought it was real. And my mom was like, oh, honey, you don't have to be so, it's okay. Like, look, she's my daughter. I promise you, she's an actress in LA. She's super happy right now. It's all okay. And the girl didn't believe her. And my mom, this is dating me, but my mom like pulled out her wallet and had like a photo of me in her wallet. She was like, no, look, this is her headshot. Like she's, you know. And so, you know, I do think that was sort of an element, especially in the early days, which, you know, was interesting for us, but I certainly think made the movie more fun for people.
And I get this all the time. Frankly, people constantly are like, dude, I thought you were dead. Even now, decades later, people are like, is it real? Like, I still get that direct message from people on social media. And it's both. I have a different experience than Katie regarding the names thing. I think it's amazing that people thought it was real, and that the things that we've heard, not only do people think it's real, but I mean, there's people who have seen it and then they can't go to sleep, so they put like a circle of salt around their car and they sleep inside, and they're calling the stories that we hear repeatedly are like this. And I think that speaks to, again, to the universal nature of the shadow, of the darkness, of the spirit world that people have a fascination with. And Paranormal Activity is one way to get access to that world. But that world has been available and open since the dawn of time. In fact, our podcast that we did True Tale or Tales of, what is it called?
Paranormal Activity, True Tales of Possession, maybe? Yeah, we didn't name it. Paramount named it, but yeah.
The Paranormal Activity podcast that we did gets into this with some of the world's foremost exorcists and witches and shamans and stuff. So when people are experiencing this kind of thing, it's not that they're just scared. I think that they're accessing a part of reality that's important.
Nice.
Well, yeah, the atmosphere in this movie, it's just so unique. And yeah, it screams, this is real. It screams that you are looking at real people living their lives just in their home. And then all these things happen. And yeah, that's what makes it, I think, make it work so well. And I remember being scared. I remember thinking someone's going to tug me on my bed.
Yeah, which is actually, go ahead.
Yeah, just that's, you know, I think, you know, the relatable, it's an easy movie to put yourself into. And also I think the scares in the movie, the way the movie builds, lends itself to each audience member filling that in, you know, specifically and individually for themselves. Because you're not watching a bunch of gore. You're not watching, there's a couple of big jump scares, but most of it is your mind worrying, kind of going, oh, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Scanning the screen, right? Being hypervigilant as an audience member. And you're watching people in a normal house, in a normal suburban life. And it's an easy thing to kind of put yourself into, which lends itself to being scarier when you go home, because you're going to go home to your apartment or your house, hopefully, and lay in a bed, as most of us, not all of us, but most of us do. And you're going to go, oh, wait, they were in a bed. They were in a house. And then, you know, so if you like being scared, we were hoping that it would be scary, not only while you watch the film, but later on, which can be fun and cathartic.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. A lot of times what you don't see is scarier than what you do, especially when, like you mentioned, putting yourself in that position. Because I hear a noise in the other room, and I just constantly assume I'm going to die. Okay. What do you do?
Or well, it's important, too, to understand, like, why that happens. Because, like, well, I don't want to get down too deep of a rabbit hole. But when you're in, like, as Katie said, you're in that hypervigilant state and starting to imagine stuff. In a sense, you are, depending on how you do it, you can be creating spirits or opening the door to things. And in a very real way, I think this allows us to access those parts of reality that that are usually dismissed or hidden, but it's a safe way to do this. And the stuff, I mean, this is kind of my old wheelhouse. Listen to the podcast, you'll get it.
I definitely, Matt.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a paranormal podcast. Us, it's what we do as well. We do pop culture and paranormal. Cool. So you're talking our language here.
That's right.
It's actually a perfect segue into a question I wanted to ask you guys is, in the film, your characters are both warned to essentially not poke the bear. And do you think doing films like this do, in a sense, poke the bear? And have you yourself had any experiences that you think might be a result in your participation in the film?
Well,
I'll answer that first, and I'll let Mika go for the bring it on home. Do I think doing movies like this? I think it depends on how you look at the world and how you would, as Mika would say, your cosmology. So I don't have a lot. For me, I don't have a lot of. I really am a spiritual person, and I believe there's a lot in the world that you can't explain. And also the level of joy and passion and purity that. I think all of us, myself included, brought to the making of this film. When I say it was like summer camp, it was not like the scary summer camp in the movies, but like the fun summer camp. Like, we were creatively just sort of like soaring on every level. And it was such a beautiful experience. So when I think of the experience of making this movie, that's what I think of. I do get scared when I watch it sometimes. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I remember, you know, experiencing the fear of it. And I love being scared. But my sort of thought about that is that it's a cathartic way to feel scared in a safe way. And for me, I'm not poking a bear because there's no bear for me to poke. Like, I sort of look at it a little bit differently. Having said that, I think Mika would probably jump in and say, you know, that there are other options as well. But for me,
You had good energy from it. You know, the good feelings aren't going to result in anything negative.
And I also think, like, you know, coming from sort of the thinking about the world through a psychological lens, everyone has deep feelings like fear and panic and terror and trauma and all of these things that we're always trying to process consciously or unconsciously in our lives. Sometimes watching a scary movie allows you to access that in a way that's confined and safe, where you can feel scared, but you're not in danger. And I think that can be cathartic for people as long as it's, you know, I don't know, done in moderation or done with the right intention. Mika.
I'll pick up what Katie's saying and validate it, but from a spiritual perspective. So first, when we were creating the movie, were we working with spirits or opening the door? I would say yes. However, with the caveat that the spirits that we were creating and playing with were our allies in creating the art. It wasn't like we were opening the door to a demon that you might encounter in real life that's like a parasite and will actually do the things that you see in the movie. It was a construct that we manifested intentionally, at least for myself. I made a spirit that is a demon in the context of the movie so that we could make a movie. And then when the movie is over, that spirit's my friend. Like we just shut it down. It's like now he's living in the film. You know what I'm saying? This is an ally spirit that helped us make art, and it happens to be shadowy and dark, but it's not the same as an actual demon, right? Yeah. It's the same. It's the spirit version of acting. When you're an actor, you're not literally becoming the physical person you're playing. The same, like Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't become Abraham Lincoln in the physical sense, in the literal sense, but he becomes a Abraham Lincoln, right? He's like a empathizing and shapeshifting into the thing. So the spirit we create from that place of that summer camp vibe is shapeshifting and becoming the spirit in the movie so that you can then relate to the actual thing you're watching. Does this make sense?
Yeah, it's like more of manifesting a muse. I totally.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's the kind of demon that you would have when you're a child and you're playing make believe. You don't create an actual demon. You create the bad guy in the story that you're playing with. It's what Katie said, it is a safe way to experience the darkness. And this is, I think, part of why horror movies are so useful in our culture. Is they allow people to experience these dangerous things in a safe environment. So if you're watching something and you're getting scared, especially if you're like a kid, you're actually sort of teaching yourself emotional regulation. So you're teaching yourself how to engage with the emotion of fear, teaching yourself how does my own mind work when I'm relating to things that are scary. How do I take care of myself? How do I access my own trauma and darkness that's coming up? And I think what a lot of people are doing when they see horror movies is exactly that. They're drawn to those things because they have something inside of themselves. And when they see the darkness on screen, it allows them to see themselves in a mirror. They reflect it, their own trauma, their own pain. So I think if anyone, whoever it is, sees the movie and it is starting to access legitimately terrifying things, my take on that is it's not that the movies open the door to something bad. It's that they had that in there anyway. And it's a vector for them to encounter it. And that's actually a very healing process if it's done correctly, as Katie described. So that's my take.
Hey, man, that's quite a take. I love it. Well, you guys keep talking about how much fun it was and how much like it was a summer camp. Well, in making this movie, is there any particular scene or day where it was more like the top fun, the best fun? Is there anything that you'd like to share?
I think there were, you know, it's you know, we filmed this over 7 days many years ago. And so the thing that stands out for me is I think it was like one very long day into the night, into the wee hours of the morning, because we didn't really do like SAG breaks or anything. Like we were just in it together. Like we were just like, we're going to go till we get this right. We'll like fall asleep, sleep for a few hours, wake up, keep going. And there was one kind of long stretch of time where I think we did, Mika, tell me if I'm wrong, but we did the the footprints, we did the dragging out of the bed, we did the attic stuff. We did so much, so many key scenes at once. And we were so, we got to the place where we were so sort of slap happy. We were so tired. We were so delirious. We were laughing. Tears are streaming down our faces. We were laughing so much. And finally, Orin was like, we got to call it. Like, we're laughing too much. We've ruined the, like, scary vibe.
Just to remind you, we shot like 30% of the movie in one night. A lot of it was a single take, okay? And then we get to the attic, and Orin opens the attic, and he told a very tasteless joke.
It's never funny in the retelling, but it's funny at the time. Yeah. Just trust us that it was funny at the time.
It was funny at 3:30 in the morning. Anyway,
yes.
After working for like 20 hours. So... that popped the energy, and we couldn't keep going.
Yes,
we're a huge part of the movie in one take.
Yes, I remember all of us sitting on the floor in the hallway outside of the like closet where the attic was, just laughing and such a bonding experience. You know, if you're like creating with people and you get to that level, that moment where you're tired and you're laughing so hard and you're like, it's just a beautiful memory for me. To have with these two guys for sure.
That's wonderful.
We were also putting so much, and there was so much emotional energy with all the chaos and the fear and the all the acting stuff that the characters were going through. So it all came out at the end. That was a great moment. I'm with Katie on that one.
Yeah.
Well, there was one special effect of the film, because a lot of the stuff obviously was practical. I wanted to know, how did you accomplish, or how did the filmmakers, how did you as a team accomplish the getting dragged out of the bed?
I was just about to ask that.
Because that was the one thing where I had a few theories, and I wanted to know how it was.
What are your theories?
Well, the first thing was, we just CGI a guy in a green suit out, and he just literally dragged you out of the room.
I was thinking maybe you just somehow pulled that off.
What? Pull yourself?
I don't know.
My physical acting is so good. I pulled myself out of the bed.
You could reverse you kind of slithering up into bed.
Yeah, maybe. You're kind of right about the green screen a little bit. So there wasn't a green screen, but Orin and his partner at the time, his good friend of his at the time, they all wore black and sort of like ninjas. And I had a harness on my leg that was kind of sticking out a little already. And so the first part of the drag was they pulled me out of bed, then they lifted up a pole, and then the string on the harness pulled me down the hallway. And then Orin's little ninja figure was taken out in post. But that's what it was, right?
No. You're making it so much easier than it actually was.
Well, it was not easy, but you know.
This is why it wasn't easy. Because if you look at the shot, right? First of all, the reason he could do it without a green screen is because the camera's on a tripod, so he could mat out, he literally just cut, like, paste on top. And every single frame of the entire shot, he edited hand by hand to take the people out. So, but
Orin,
if you
Pelly noticed, for the win.
Wow. Yeah. It took him a year. If you look at the door, the stairs are directly outside of the bedroom. So we kept running into an issue where Katie was getting dragged out of bed, but then she would hit the stairs and it would ruin
the shot.
Yeah. So she was like, just drag me down the stairs. And
you're a brave one.
Orin's like, I don't think my insurance is going to cover that. So no. But Katie was a trooper. And then we eventually figured it out after take after take after take. It took like 3 hours to get this right. And it only worked one time. But there was like a bunch of hooks. And they were like unhooking and running and moving all so that she would be dragged first out of the bed, then around the stairs and down the hall all in one motion while we were acting. And it was an epic event when it finally worked, but that's what's in the movie.
That's awesome,
man. Ryan had a question about the endings, because I have seen the theatrical one, and that's kind of what I stick to as a film person. I usually stay with theatrical. When there's extended cuts, I usually don't. But Ryan tells me he saw like three different endings.
I knew that there were two other endings. I know there was one where you slit your throat and basically the demon leaves you. And then the other one, cops actually come in and get startled and they shoot you.
Yes.
So
the demon slams a door, which sounds like a gunshot, and makes the cops shoot her. So either way, the demon is killing everybody.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I was curious, how did you feel about the other two endings? Did you like them better? Was there like a vote?
A favorite?
Which one was your
favorite? There wasn't a vote. I'll tell you something. When Steven Spielberg says redo the ending, don't let the girl die, there's no vote. You just go with what he says, and then you're just like, yeah, cool. That's yes, Mr. Spielberg.
That's right.
So we filmed the one with the police. That's what we filmed when we shot the film. So original screenings, you know, that was the ending that was there. And it felt like the most sort of like grounded in the sense that what would really happen potentially. Somebody would get curious, where's Kate? You know, somebody would call, there would be a welfare check, that kind of thing. And we came up with that, I believe, at a California pizza kitchen, the three of us, because we were midway through this shoot, and we were like, how are we going to end this film? Because Oren had known sort of key moments in the trajectory, but we hadn't really come up with the ending. And so we came up with it, he cast it, we filmed it. And I liked that ending. I liked the root of what we were going for and coming up with it and how it played out, and the guys who played the cops did a great job. But I really appreciate, well, first of all, that for Steven Spielberg to see our film was like a phenomenal life moment. Like,
incredible.
You know, I don't even know. I can't even process it. And it happened to us. I feel like I'm talking about somebody else right now. So that was really magical. And to go down and do reshoots and explore, we shot a bunch of different versions. I'm crawling on the ceiling in one. I was terrible at that. Couldn't use it. Like, there's a lot of different things that we did and found the thing that worked that allowed my character to stay alive, which allowed for there to be more films and allowed for audience members to leave the theater going, well, is she still out there? Like, just to have that little voice in the back versus, oh, well, it's a contained film. It's dead. You know, I think that was smart, both for a franchise purpose, but also just for the experience of audience members getting into their car and going home. Like the question mark of it, I think, is really smart. And so I have a lot of gratitude to Steven Spielberg for taking an interest and sharing some wisdom with us. So I go with the theatrical, too, even though I have a soft spot for all of them.
Okay.
You know, it's true.
I'm with Katie on that. And also I would say there's a psychological principle where regarding open loops, where if you watch a movie and everybody dies and the bad guy is dead and everything, you close the loop. But if you have the bad guy not dead, you have an open loop, which is necessary to create a franchise, which is what Steven Spielberg knew. And he was absolutely correct. So that said, there's a level of brutality, I think, in some of the other endings, like when Katie cuts her throat.
That's rough.
It's disturbing in a different kind of way. And when the demon shoots, like sets it up so that Katie dies as well. In that sense, too, I mean, the original idea was that the demon escapes anyway, even though Katie's dead. For my idea that did not go anywhere was that for the sequel, the demon is loose. So if you see the movie, you could be the next victim because he's going, and then it jumps from like to the audience, and then we can go anywhere with it, and you have like a meta kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
that didn't have go anywhere because Oren did not want to be as a character.
I don't know. I think it's ahead of your time. I feel like that would happen like 10 years later. They would have went with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, if that was 2017, maybe. I mean,
yeah, I think as like a meta kind of thing, that would be pretty epic. You know, like why not?
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for being with us. And hey, everybody who's listening, everybody who's watching, we wanted to tell you that in 2 days from now, on the 30th at MJR Theaters in Troy, Michigan, they're doing a screening and Q&A. They're doing photo ops and stuff at 4 and then the screening at 7. So make sure to be there. And guys, do you have anything else you want to say to our audience, our paranormal friends out there? and I hit my mic.
Well, first of all, thank you to you two for having us and for chatting with us. It's always fun, you know, to talk about this. It was such a magical experience in our lives that we will forever have gratitude for, and I never tire of revisiting it and celebrating it. And like Mika said earlier, we truly from the bottom of our heart love the fans of this film. We are fans of these films as well. You know, we're with you in that. And so we love meeting people. We love saying hi. We love hearing people's stories. So we hope to get to meet a lot of you guys over the weekend at the screening. We will be there with bells on, ready to say hi and do some more question answering and take some photos, and there's going to be a screening. So it'll be great. So we hope to see everybody there. And yeah, thanks to you guys for talking with us today. It's fun.
And I'll just add to that by just saying that for me, there's something special about the paranormal community that's, I think, a little different than most fandoms. I think if you're into the paranormal, you have a sort of natural connection to the other side. And people who have that sense, it's cool to hang out with them. Like, they're just generally cool people in general, but by definition, like, if you can see spirits or you can sense them, like, you're probably awesome. So if that applies to you, come down, hang out with us. We'll talk about the paranormal. I want to hear your take, your experiences. And yeah, let's, we'll just have like a paranormal party. Come on down.
Really meant a lot to have you guys here. Thank you so much. Oh, it's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having us. Sure. And thanks for the nice questions and the friendly vibe. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah.
Cool beans. Yeah. All right. We'll let you guys go. Stay in touch. Right. And I'm hoping to see you on Saturday.
Yeah. Sounds come say good. Hi. I hope so too. All right.
Awesome. Bye, good luck, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. I don't know, Ryan. I think the most surprising thing is getting advice from Steven Spielberg.
Bro, I had no idea. Yeah, asking that question, and they're just like, yeah, when Steven Spielberg says, don't kill the girl, you don't kill the girl. Like,
fair enough.
Like, Steven Spielberg watched our film. Could you imagine if Steven Spielberg was listening right now?
I would have so many questions.
I would. I would. He's probably going through some kind of crisis.
Yeah, like, what do you
we're here for you, George. Give us a call.
George? See, he's got Lucas on his brain.
Oh, I got Lucas on the brain.
Steven? I know they seem interchangeable because of Indiana Jones, but they're very different people.
My lisp is gone. Steven.
Oh, man.
Sorry, that was a Cable Guy reference. I apologize for that, everybody.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm John. We're the hosts of Zombie Strains, the podcast where we watch all of the zombie movies in chronological order.
It has been a wild ride so far, discovering where and when all our favorite zombie tropes originated. Things like the first cannibal zombies.
Bowery at Midnight, 1942.
The first rage zombie.
Teenage Zombies, 1959.
And the first homicidal zombie.
Dr. Blood's Coffin, 1961.
If you love zombie films as much as we do, join us on Zombie Strains.
Find Zombie Strains on your podcast app of choice.
No worries. I think we're going to be wrap up the pop culture section. You know, we'll save some of the news for next week. It's fine.
Why not? Yeah, y'all already know Mandalorian and Grogu is the best. That's all you need.
Well, fair enough. You know what? Let's get into aliens. Let's talk about some extraterrestrials. Now, this one was a little bit hard for Ryan because I gave him the same parameters as I gave him with spooky stuff. I said, try to relate it to paranormal activity. And now we could all sit back and judge him as to whether or not he did that. And if Ryan failed, I want you to hit us up on social media with the hashtag Ryan failed.
That's right. Shame me. If you could, I'm actually into it. But anyways, no, just kidding. But anyways, no, I did, and I actually got two.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. I won up to you by giving you two stories that are paranormal activity, like having to do with extraterrestrials and UFOs.
So enjoy this week's
Disclosure Discussion. Ha 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 ha. It's about aliens and stuff.
Whitley Strieber is among the most prominent figures writing on ufology and the alien abduction phenomenon. He played a significant role in popularizing the latter via his 1987 book, Communion.
I like that book.
the subsequent film inspired by it, in which
Christopher
Walken portrayed Stryver. The polarization would in turn have outsized impact on 1990s pop culture.
Did you like that movie, by the way?
I never saw it.
You never did? It's actually really good.
No, I've seen clips. I know about the I don't want to give it away. An impact that is still felt today. Communion, a true story, is based on the purported experiences of Stryver, who underwent a feeling of lost time and terrifying flashbacks. The author describes a peaceful evening at his cabin that abruptly turned terrifying. Awakened by strange noises, he witnessed a small, non-human figure enter his bedroom despite the house alarm being set. This initial encounter was so shocking it felt like a dream, yet his mind was sharp and fully awake. Following the figure's entry, Stryver experienced profound paralysis and a blackout. His next conscious memory was being moved, naked, and unable to control his body out of the room and into the night. This terrifying sensation of helplessness marked the beginning of an ordeal that felt intensely real.
Okay, but if these aliens can travel across the universe to our planet, they're just going to strip a guy naked and drag him across the lawn? Just feels like you could hover, take his clothes off on the ship. I mean, did they return him naked?
I'm not judging.
Did they put his clothes back on? It kind of feels like maybe he was just kidnapped.
Maybe it's a cultural misunderstanding. They don't have the kind of rules when it comes to, consent.
What are you doing? No. It's like, what are you doing? You're meeting this man for the first time. You got to strip him naked and drag him across the lawn. What are you, a savage?
I was going to say,
don't be rude.
It's only polite.
Jesus.
It's only polite.
My God.
So after the experience, Stryver awoke with a vivid yet false memory of seeing a barn owl outside his window.
They also did that with the movie The Fourth Kind.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, and owl imagery. They also did that in Resident Alien.
You're right.
Owl imagery is often like aliens.
Who?
That was dumb.
Continue. I'm sorry. Sorry.
No. That was like worse than a dad joke, man.
I had to.
That was a stepdad joke. I don't even know.
He describes his experiences in vivid detail, waking up to strange entities standing.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I really, I promise you guys I am. Strange entities standing by his bed, and later undergoing hypnotherapy to uncover repressed memories of these unexplainable events with the help of UFO researcher Bud Hopkins. The author explores various theories about the being's origins and motivations, drawing parallels to mystical folklore and ancient traditions. Stryver reflects on the profound impacts these interactions had on his mental well-being and sense of reality.
That's fair.
He calls for more open scientific inquiry into such phenomena, challenging the dismissive stance of the mainstream, which we here at Earthling Entertainment agree with, right? I mean, let's ask questions. Yeah. So that's what I got for you for the first one.
All right.
About Communion. I haven't seen the movie, but I would like to.
So I read the book. Well, I audibled the book. And I saw the movie very separate from each other, but from what I remember, it was pretty much the same.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, as far as book to movie adaptations go, they're never.
That's what I was going to ask.
Never perfect. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right. All right.
Number two.
This one I had some fun with.
All right.
The Hopkinsville Goblins. And yes, this belongs in disclosure discussion, and you will see why.
Are you sure? Because it sounds like a spooky stuff.
I know it smells spooky, but let's see. The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, also known as the Hopkinsville Goblins case, and to a lesser extent, Kelly Greenman case, is the name given.
Are they leprechauns?
You will see.
Oh, I'll shut up.
To a series of incidents of close encounters with presumably extraterrestrial beings. There were dozens of eyewitnesses to the incidents, which included two families present at the farmhouse and others in the area. other civilians, some of whom had no connections to the family at the farmhouse, and even one in another state. Perhaps most significantly, the witnesses also included several local policemen and a state trooper who saw and heard strange phenomena such as unexplained lights in the night sky and noises on the same night.
So relatively credible people.
Yes, a lot of people that came together and were like, no.
Yeah, we all saw this, guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
The seven people present in the farmhouse claimed that they were terrorized by an unknown number of creatures similar to gremlins. Now, remember, back in the day, gremlins were a very believed, like, Martian race that were messing with our planes. Remember that we covered
like
that before.
Yeah, it was World War II. They thought gremlins were an excuse for any kind of mechanical thing that would go wrong.
It was a big deal.
Yeah. There was this really weird movie of Chloe Moretz where she fought a gremlin. And then she had a baby in a safe. It was a weird movie.
That is a weird movie. You're going to write that down. I want to see it.
And then it was like her baby, and I don't know. She was trying to escape, but she was in the military. It was really weird. But it had gremlins.
That's what I'm saying. So this has credibility as extraterrestrial, because that was the origins that they gave to the gremlins. They said that they were from Mars. We covered this before. So... which have often been referred to as the Hopkinsville goblins in popular culture. The residents of the farmhouse described them as around 3 feet tall, with upright pointed ears, thin limbs. The being's legs were said to be almost non-functional or devolved, or even in a state of atrophy.
So like kind of like E.T., they were more like torsos of little stubby things?
Correct.
Okay.
Long arms and claw-like hands or talons.
Okay.
The creatures were either silvery in color or wearing something metallic. Their movements on occasion seemed to defy gravity, with them floating above the ground and appearing in up-high places, and they walked with a swaying motion like they were wading through water.
So they're like waddling penguins with little hover boats.
But maybe they have like anti-gravity, like technology, maybe they can like bubble themselves in it. Like we've heard about that certain UFOs could do that.
Yeah, sure.
For propulsion.
Yeah, why not?
So although the creatures never entered the house, they would pop up at the windows and at the doorway, waking the children in the house up to a hysterical frenzy.
I mean, that would be creepy. If a monster peeks in on you,
yeah,
I'd be a little scared. I can't lie.
The families fled the farmhouse in the middle of the night to the local police station, and Sheriff Russell Greenwell noted that they were visibly shaken. The families returned to the farmhouse with Sheriff Greenwell and 20 officers. Yet, the occurrences continued. Police saw evidence of a struggle and damage to the house, as well as seeing strange lights and hearing noises themselves. The witnesses additionally claimed to have used firearms to shoot at the creatures with little or actually no effect at all. And the house and surrounding grounds were extensively damaged during the incident. There are no known photographs
shooting holes in the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
I imagine this thing's just running around like...
Exactly. And then they're seeing these lights, right? So what if they're able to just be like, pew, like maybe they could like just manifest into like some, like maybe they're interdimensional. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. You're taking some great leaps, but why
not?
Hey,
I don't mind it, you know? Like, so there are no known photographs. They didn't have any cameras that night. This only happened this night. This was one incident. It was one visitation.
Yeah, one tourist of aliens coming by, like, let's go see the humans.
Right.
Yeah.
So these sightings, supposedly, I like that you said it, inspired the movie E.T., which is another time that we can bring up... Steven Spielberg tonight.
Yeah, we've brought up Steven Spielberg 3 times in this episode so far, so it's a good episode.
That's right. And also the Pokemon Sableye, which I kid you not, I always have to bring up a Pokemon, guys.
You know, I'm going to start bringing up the 1993 Super Mario movie again if you bring up Pokemon.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about the prequels.
Okay, we got it.
To Captain Planet.
Let's just,
Avatar. Airbender. Anyways, and also possibly the Denzians from Call of Duty Black Ops 2 Zombies. The Hopkinsville Goblins are also featured in the popular trading card game MetaZoo, Cryptid Nation. We like, it's so funny how many cryptids we cover that I'm always like, why haven't we bought these yet? Like, what? We need to do, like, I say this every time, and I'm like, I just need to look up MetaZoo Cryptid Nation. Shout out.
I got a lot of board games that I don't get to play anymore. See that one behind you? That one Ghostbusters game is not even open.
Ghostbusters.
I just don't have a lot of time. And I got little kids who aren't going to play a big complicated game. They're like, apples to apples.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fair enough. You know, mine like Snackosaurus Rex. So, you know, we all have our games.
I mean, I would like Snackosaurus Rex.
It is a fun game, actually.
All right.
It's pretty sweet.
Speaking of which, you know what was a really good game?
What?
Forbidden Bridge. It was a game from the 90s, and it was like these two plastic idols, and they had this bridge, and they shook it when you pressed the button, and you had a little Indiana Jones character would cross the river and then go across the bridge to like get the idol, and you know, it would knock you off. It was just very Indiana Jones.
You're going to have to show me that, because that is straight up out of Indiana Jones.
It was an awesome game. Yes.
That does sound like an awesome game. I don't know. I got nothing. That's a fun game.
Yeah. 13 Dead and Drive, Fireball Island. These are all great games.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And of course, you know, you can't forget Mousetrap. I always bring up Mousetrap. That was my favorite when I was a kid.
Mousetrap seems like, you know, when they're making these movies into board games, they did Battleship, they did a bunch of stuff. They should do a Mousetrap one, but make it like Saw. Right?
Oh my God, an R-rated Mousetrap? How awesome. Bro!
Did you know?
Copyright Earthling Entertainment.
You were the mouse.
Dude. Hello. I want to play a trick.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to, like, just totally not just
slightly off.
Just slightly off. Hello, mouse.
Well, Ryan, thank you very much for succeeding at doing a disclosure discussion that felt paranormal-esque.
Right. I tried my, like I said, I know the goblins were a bit of a stretch, but they were freaking them out. They were messing with them at home. Sure. It was a one-time thing. Multiple witnesses. I mean, hey, sounds to me like it happened. I believe it.
Well, you know what? I have a real world weird that has nothing to do with paranormal activity, and you're going to check that out right now.
We are?
Real world weird.
Students accidentally served baked dirt at Maine High School event.
Accidentally.
A Maine high school was recently forced to issue a rather odd apology for an unfortunate accidental incident. An accidental incident.
Yep. Wherein, totally our bad, guys.
My bad. Wherein some students were inadvertently fed baked dirt at a dinner event. Metamac Valley High School in the community of Waldoboro posted a peculiar mea culpa last Thursday following its annual empty bowl supper gathering at the previous evening. In the hours leading up to the event, the school explained a science class had conducted an experiment in which students baked potting soil to see how this might later influence plant growth. Fair enough. The proverbial dirt casserole was subsequently placed in a baking dish covered with foil and set to the side in the stove area away from the food items for dinner. However, as volunteers scrambled to serve the many families attending the popular event, someone grabbed the soil and brought it to the table, thinking it was a dessert offering for the evening. Presented with a tasty-looking dish, the school said, three students briefly put some of the soil in their mouths before immediately realizing what it actually was.
Okay, I was going to say, like, there's no way I could eat dirt and not know I was eating dirt.
That they knew they were eating dirt.
Yeah, okay. It's a little misleading because they're like, we accidentally fed them dirt. Well, kind of.
I mean, they did. Yeah, they ate it. They put it in their mouths.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right.
That sucks. That'd be terrible. Be like, oh, dude, that's it. The rest of the year off.
Be like, seriously?
No homework.
I didn't even want to come here today, man.
Nope, that's it, dude. No, I'm making demands. Right? At this point, I'm making demands.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you, I'm not saying you should just go sue crazy, but like, could you sue the school or something?
Yes.
I don't know.
Why not? Oh, they're going to.
Is there any more?
There's going to be a crazy haired a lawyer that will take that case. I guarantee it. Gas staff at the supper quickly removed the dirt dish, which was mistakenly found its way onto the menu. Fortunately, the students were no worse for wear after sampling the soil. Deeply apologetic for the mix-up, the school stressed that the incident was completely an accidental situation and absolutely not a prank. That said, One imagines that some mischievous members of the senior class likely wish that they had thought of such a thing.
I'm sure they did. I believe sure this was a prank, yeah. And they say no one was hurt, but Dirtmouth Craig begs to differ because he's been called Dirtmouth Craig ever since. I'm just saying.
I mean, yeah, you don't forget Dirtmouth Craig.
He's not getting that out of his life.
Oh, you got some worms. Dirtmouth Craig.
Dirtmouth Craig.
I got worms.
Dirtmouth Craig.
Dirtmouth Craig.
Dirtmouth Craig.
Dirtmouth Craig.
With Earl Swirl.
That brings us to Time Traveler Videos offer a grim vision of the 2050s.
All right, so this one I thought was kind of clever. Now, I don't actually think this guy is from the future at all, but this is what he does. He poses that he is from the future and does these TikToks and just says, like, this is how the world is now after World War III. It's interesting.
A TikTok creator claiming to be a time traveler from 2055 is attracting attention in publications like The Express, with videos that allegedly show the aftermath of World War III. The clips depict scenes of destruction in places such as Paris and Russia, including damaged military aircraft, abandoned streets, and recognizable landmarks appearing worn or deserted. The creator, who posts under the name unknown.path31, has also shared videos featuring historical figures like Abraham Lincoln and a still alive Michael Jackson, with imagery suggested of AI generated or digitally altered content.
I mean, yeah, we'd assume, yeah.
While there's no evidence that there is nothing more than digital storytelling, as speculative internet folklore, it's a tidy snapshot of the current moment. Our fears about global conflict, filtered through AI imagery and social media performance. Do you believe time travelers are here warning us of their future?
I do. Everyone on this show does, to be honest. Because remember that one image that we did at like episode like one or two of the time traveler from like the 40s.
The hipster with
like the sunglasses and stuff like that.
And it is, that is still a picture that is like wild to me because he does. He looks like he was from here.
Yeah. Just looks like, oh yeah.
From a few years ago.
Popped in and say hi.
Right. So makes you wonder.
It does make you wonder.
Cause you know, Deadpool can time travel. So why couldn't anybody else?
Fair enough.
Right.
No,
fair
not
enough.
The poll I thought you would do.
That's what I did.
Well, guys, I'm not going to wrap this up. It's been a long day. I mentioned earlier that we went to Camp Dearborn. Well, we got back, and then an hour later, we had the interview, and then 20 minutes after that, we shot the show, and I am exhausted, so I'm ending the show a little early.
He's a tired Joe, and I'm an appreciative Ryan. Thank you, Joe, for sticking it out and hauling ass for this whole show, dude. No, this was a great one, and thank you guys for tuning in once again. If you're watching us on video, thank you very much. Make sure to subscribe, like, even comment. And if you're not, if you're just doing audio only, that's amazing. Please just make sure to download the episode wherever you're listening to us, and keep it up. Every Thursday is a new episode.
And also, guys, if you like Paranormal Activity and you want to see it again in theaters, and you can sit it with the stars, you know, Micah and Katie are going to be there.
Yeah.
And you guys can do Q&A and photo ops. Ed is at Troy, Michigan, the Troy MJR. And I think it's photo ops and stuff at 4, and then the screening and the Q&A at 7. So definitely check it out. There's still some tickets available. And yeah, I mean, 2 days away, so I'd grab those tickets now because I don't think there's many left.
And I know they're really excited to interact with the fans. They couldn't be any more awesome to talk to, and they were telling us how excited they are for this.
Absolutely. And see you next week, guys. And from all of us here at Earthling Entertainment,
see ya. And goodbye.
Ha ha.
Hi guys, I'm Bree.
And I'm Allie. This is Off Script.
If you think about it, books are potential scripts for movies.
When this adaptation happens, typically it's disappointing because they went off script.
In this series, we will be talking about how off script they went.
So I did watch another movie this weekend while I was on my phone. It was called Whistle. And I don't expect you to know it. It was like a Shudder original. But you like horror movies, so you might like this one.
Yeah.
So Nick Frost was in it. He wasn't the main star, but Daphne Keene was, the X-23. So she played Logan's daughter, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, she. It was really, really good. It was basically, there's like an Aztec death whistle. And if you blow it and you hear the sound, death comes after you. But was so think of it almost like a Final Destination, because these people were just dying in wacky ways. Yeah.
Expect the unexpected. Earthling Entertainment.